Okay, James, we are done with the draft and we are just about there for free agency. It's not quite there yet, but we wanted to get a podcast out after the draft before free agency. That's all I got to say to start.
Well, it's a tight schedule, right? So the longevity of this show might not be, we'll see. I mean, you know, there's lots of rumors around the Leafs right now. The qualifying offer deadline is in within hours. I'm pretty sure the Leafs are not going to qualify Andre Kasha. Not a huge surprise at this point. And they are going to qualify Pierre Engvall. But, you know, I mean, there's lots for us to talk about. Maybe we should start, I guess, with, you know, you and I were both in Montreal for most of the past week. Any kind of like learnings or conversations from there is probably the way to go. And then we can get into looking ahead after that.
All right. Well, I know you learned some stuff. Why don't you tell me what you learned? Am I putting you on the spot too much? Do you want me to give you some topics?
Yeah, sure. You know, it was great. Draft in Montreal, the crowd there was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing I love about the draft the most is literally everyone is there. And we had, because there hadn't been an in-person draft in 3 years, we had a lot of staff, editors, writers who had never been to a draft. So I was having a lot of conversations with people at The Athletic just about like what it was going to be like and what was great about it. And I said to all of them, you know, the thing I love about it is that everybody's there, like every agent, every draft eligible player, every team and every staff member and every scout. And it's really just a huge, huge gathering of and every media member obviously as well. So they all descended on Montreal. They all filled the bars of Montreal until late at night. And I had lots and lots of good conversations with people from all of those groups. And it was pretty neat. I don't know if you noticed, Jonas, at our hotel, there were like a lot of the kids that were going to get drafted. And it was pretty cool to see, you know, Rutger McGroarty's family was staying in our hotel. And you know, after he got picked by Winnipeg, I think, what was it, 14th or 15th overall? You know, they were just like celebrating in the lobby and at the pool and things like that. And it was pretty cool to see them, you know, go into the draft a little bit anxious and then come out wearing Winnipeg Jets gear and just like as happy as could be. So it's a pretty special moment, I think, for a lot of those families.
Definitely. Definitely. And obviously the Leafs' first pick, Fraser Minton, they trade down to get that pick. We'll talk about the Mrazek trade. I don't know why I haven't mentioned that yet. Yeah.
Where does Fraser Minton play his hockey?
It's a little place called Kamloops. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes. I got to tell you, like, do you remember that Seinfeld episode with George Costanza? And they talk about, like, his worlds colliding, like his friend world and, like, his relationship world colliding?
Yeah.
Kyle Dubas sitting up at his podium at the draft and talking over and over again about the Kamloops Blazers was, for me, a little bit like worlds colliding because my love of hockey started in my hometown in Kamloops. We were season ticket holders there, and I used to go to every single game. And I'm pretty sure the Leafs have not drafted a Kamloops Blazer, certainly in like the 15 years I've covered the team.
All right, well, you can celebrate, have a beer. But let's actually talk.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning, Jonas.
Well, later also, you can have a beer, whatever.
There are too many beers in Montreal, so I do not need a beer today.
Okay, well, so I don't know how deeply we should delve into this just because nothing has happened yet. But there obviously are quite a bit of rumblings about Matt Murray coming to Toronto. Until we actually know what a trade looks like, I think it's hard to pick it apart too much. But do you have any just general thoughts on the idea, or do you need to see, like, I kind of feel like I need to see what a trade looks like before I really dive in.
Well, but I mean, this trade could happen while we're recording, right? I mean, that would be good. Or it could happen like 5 minutes after we stop recording, and that would be bad. And maybe we'd have to come back for 5 minutes and just say, here's what happened. I think a trade, you know what I think we should do, Jonas, is we should talk about what kind of a Matt Murray trade would make sense for the Leafs that we think would be a good trade. Because I think some people are seeing this and being like, the guy makes 6.25. He's been injured a lot. He's had some bad seasons. Why on earth would the Leafs want this guy? Now, step one, I think that you would need Ottawa to retain half the contract so that his cap hit comes in around 3.1. That would make it somewhat palatable. Step two could either be the Leafs trading out some salary as part of this trade, or the Leafs getting another asset as part of this trade in addition, so, or both. You know, because the parameters of the Matt Murray trades that have been out there floating around, they've been talking to Buffalo. Ottawa doesn't want to pay that contract. The contract's heavily backloaded, so there's a lot of financial implications for a franchise that doesn't often, you know, spin to the cap. You know, the trades that have been out there have been, there's been sweeteners involved. So, and we don't know what those are. So if this is a trade, Jonas, like, let me just speculate. Let's say Ottawa retains half, the Leafs include, let's, a contract that they wouldn't mind shedding. I'm going to say Justin Hall, just because, not because I'm down on Justin Hall, but just that frees up $2 million and they still have six NHL defensemen, even if with Hall moved, and the Leafs get some sort of a draft pick back, third rounder, second rounder, something like that. Like, do you think that that is the kind of trade that might make some sense?
I don't know.
Or you build, choose your own adventure and build your Matt Murray trade that might make sense.
Well, I was wondering if you could spin another third of the contract off somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's kind of what came to my mind. Like, why?
The only thing is, you have to pay the with the contract backloaded the way that it is. Like, there's so much money in the third and fourth year of that deal, mm-hmm. that it's going to be a lot of actual dollars that third team is going to have to spend. And, you know, we saw, remember when San Jose ate part of the Nick Foligno deal?
Yeah, that's what came to mind for me, for sure.
Yeah, but the difference, Jonas, is...
Yeah, Nick there's Foligno, 2 years left, yeah.
Nick Foligno was a quarter of a season,
yeah.
that you had to eat. Like, it's real money. So, it's 2 years, if you want some team to retain a quarter or 25% of the contract for two more years, it's not just the cap hit. It's not just like the $1.55 million or whatever the quarter is. It's going to be even more than that in actual dollars. So, you're asking some third team to spend, I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but let's say $4-4.5 million. You're going to have to give up a good asset for them to do that. And
but so,
is it worth it to do that?
But maybe what I'm kind of thinking is, if I'm the Leafs, why am I giving up the asset? Would be my thought. Like, Ottawa needs to, as much as the Leafs need a goalie, yeah, Ottawa needs to get rid of this contract. So if I'm the Leafs, I'm saying to Ottawa, you're going to pay that asset. We're not going to pay that asset.
Well, and maybe, and then you get the cap hit
even further down, right? Yeah,
maybe it's like another $1 million or something, and Ottawa has to, you know, and then Murray comes to the Leafs making only $2 million on the cap, and
then it's okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. But to flip it back to you, Jonas, maybe you want that other asset to come to the Leafs, right? Like, as opposed to, like, do you want that asset to get the cap hit down, or do you just want to add it? Because, I mean, both things could be possible, right?
I don't like the idea, honestly, of having the 2 years with the uncertainty with who he is at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. That, if it was 1 year left, me. It would be a bit different, right? Because you could just put him in the minors or whatever you had to do for 1 year. But yeah, 2 years, I just don't know what Matt Murray is going to give you. Like, I mean, he was in the minors at one point last year, right? So yes. I think we should be clear up front, or maybe not entirely up front, because we've been talking about him already. Like, he's a big time wild card.
Yes. Well, and so I wrote about kind of the goalie shuffle over the weekend. It's gotten really hard. Like, they are in a really, really, really tough spot. Fleury obviously decides to stay in Minnesota. Husso gets traded to Detroit. And suddenly it's like you look around and you're just like, there's Kemper, there's Campbell, and then it's like there's trades. And even the trades are like guys like this, like they're not perfect. I like a less riskier option. Like, I think James Reimer just makes a lot of sense. He's cheap. He's obviously played here before. If it doesn't work out, like, you have the ability to pivot. Do any of the trade candidates besides Murray kind of fit for you better than, I guess, Murray?
I think I'd be knocking on the Islanders' door.
Yeah, that's for sure.
See if they change their mind on Varlamov, because, you know, if you're the Islanders, you're going to want to improve your team in other areas. They're relatively tight on the cap. They're looking to do some big things in free agency. They've been tied to some of the big names that are out there. But, you know, honestly, I don't... What do you... I'm not 100% sure what the Leafs' game plan was going into this goalie situation. Like,
yeah, it's a good question. I've been wondering, James, like, I was starting to think over the weekend, like, did they need to be more aggressive with this? But, like, part of it is, like, what are you can't sign, example, like, you can't sign Marc-Andre Fleury until he becomes a free agent unless you're going to trade for his rights. And obviously, Minnesota wants to sign him. Like, you could have traded for Huso's rights. So,
yeah, go ahead. That's exactly what I was just going to say to you. Like, would you have done that, Huso? I mean, the Red Wings gave up, like, a high third round pick just for his rights and then gave him $4.75 million for a guy who has not played a lot. Like, they were pretty aggressive.
But I guess if you're the Leafs and you had determined that Huso is your guy, then you make that trade, right?
Unless you think he's not worth, you know, a third round pick. And I mean, it just shows how many teams were interested in Huso that Detroit had to give up that much for him. Like, that contract was on the high end of what I thought Huso would get, and they gave up a good pick. So that's
I guess the tough part, James, is like,
very, very tough climate to add a goaltender right now. And now the Leafs need two. And, you know, it's the number one question of their offseason. They might not do a whole lot else, right? So, like, we could be talking about this goalie situation, like, all offseason and all training camp and all, you know, especially if they go in with two guys with question marks hanging over them.
Well, that's the tough thing. It's like that game of musical chairs you used to play when you're a kid, or even, like, I'm trying to think of some other games. I guess musical chairs is the perfect one. Like, you just get left with the only chair left or one of the only chairs, and, like, suddenly there's not a lot of options. Like, it hasn't seemed like they really want to pay Jack Campbell. Yeah, that could change now that things have shifted. And so suddenly you're looking around, it's like, where's the goalie? Like, what are they going to do? And so that's why I would prefer,
you know what,
a more flexible option.
Sorry to interrupt you. You know what I think, after, like, talking to a lot of people, and I want to write about this at some point. I think that the whole Peter Mrazek, the way that happened, I think that it's changed the front office's mindset on how to proceed here. And okay. We'll see if it works.
Explain.
If it works or not. I just think that they don't want to dedicate term and cap hit to a big question mark again.
Okay, well then, how does Matt Murray enter the conversation?
Well,
huge cap hit, but...
Yeah, I think we need to see the way that...
Yeah, that's
we
fair.
We need to see the way that plays out. I was on the radio this morning and they were asking me, like, how does this make any sense? And it's like, well, we have to see... You know, Carlo Colaiacovo was like, if Matt Murray... you know, is the new Jack Campbell. I was like, well, we don't know that. Like, they're going to add two goalies. So, like, if Matt Murray's your backup and his cap hit is $2 or $2.5 million and you get a good asset in that trade, then maybe you're okay. If Matt Murray is the new Jack Campbell and is your number one, then yeah, I mean, there's some concerns there for sure.
Yeah. Well, so you brought it up. Peter Mrazek gets dealt, as we kind of expected would happen, to Chicago. It's kind of shocking how little it actually took. I know there were some who have framed this as they traded their first round pick to get rid of Peter Mrazek. And yeah, that's, like, sort of true, but they also just moved down 13 picks. Like, it's like the best trade they could have possibly made.
People are just trying to be, it's so disingenuous to say the Leafs gave up their first round pick to get rid of Peter Mrazek. Like, people were tweeting that out and ripping on the Leafs, and You drop back 13 spots. Apparently, like, it was only, like, you know, two or three guys on their list or whatever. I mean, the difference between picking 25th overall and 38th overall is not that big. It's really not.
No.
Who cares if it's in the first round or not? It doesn't matter. Like, that's just an arbitrary line. It's not like the 31st pick is way better than the 34th pick because it's in the first round and the 34th pick's in the second round. Like, come on. But, you know, some people are just looking for any angle to take a shot at the Leafs, and they found it there. I mean, that's not to say, like, the Mrazek signing was a bad signing. Like, it didn't
work. Oh, yes.
It was a mistake. It was one of the biggest mistakes that this front office has made. But to get out of it by only moving down 13 spots in the draft, and we'll see how it plays out. I mean, there's probably going to be some players in that space between 25th and 38th that are going to be good players. And if Fraser Minton doesn't turn out, which cannot possibly be true because he plays for the Kansas Blazers, the best team in junior hockey, and the host of the Memorial Cup next year. But there, you know, if it's the kind of, you know, the situation where they traded back to get Travis Dermott, and then all of a sudden Sebastian Aho goes to Carolina in the middle, it's like, well, maybe we shouldn't have traded back. I mean, that could happen. But the value of the different picks, there's not much of a gap there.
Yeah, to get out from that contract just for that. I mean, I just pulled up a random draft, James. I just looked up like 2017, who was picked in like 25 through 27. You can, like, Jason, Montreal picks Ryan Poling with 25, and Jake Ottinger goes to Dallas at 26. And then you look a little further down, and like at 39, Dallas gets Jason Robertson. Like, you just, I don't know. Yes,
it's very similar. It's very, like, you know, if you look at historical draft pick values, that like mid 20 spot, you've got like I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think you got like a 10-15% chance of getting a really good NHL player. And 38 is not that much different than 25.
I just can't believe Chicago couldn't squeeze anything else out of the Leafs. Like, the Leafs were, they had no way, they needed to get rid of this contract.
Like, well, where else were they going to be able to trade him too, right?
I mean, like, maybe Arizona, but I don't know. Arizona has a goalie, and
The move that the Leafs made was much preferable to the buyout, and I think that the buyout was legitimate consideration if they couldn't trade him to Chicago.
Yeah, I guess that's the other option. I guess maybe that's their leverage. We'll just buy him out. But that's obviously not ideal. Not just a mistake of a signing. I mean, that's why, like, it's in the position that they're in, James, like, the way that they're built, they have so little margin for error with that kind of stuff. And the one thing I don't really understand is why he ended up being the guy. Like, all the things we learned about Mrazek last year were things that were known about Mrazek before they signed him.
So, like, you know what, I think we should write about this, honestly. Like, today, you and I need to talk, because I think we've got some stuff, but I don't mind, like, putting a taste of it into the podcast before we write the story. But, you know, I think that it was really looking at some of the analytics on Mrazek and getting excited about what he had done. That's my understanding of like, they thought he was going to be potentially a really good option for them. And they weren't sure about Campbell, right? Like, they really weren't sure what he was going to be able to give them.
But see, so that's where you need to blend analytics with, like, whatever you want to call it. Because, like, he was known as being inconsistent. He was known for getting injured. So, like, the analytics can be great, but if those two things...
He played 12 games. I was surprised not that they signed Mrazek. I was surprised it was 3 years, and I was surprised the cap hit was so high. But there were... Again, last year in free agency, there were some bad goalie contracts. Like, I'm sure they went into free agency being like, we like Mrazek, let's get him at 2 years, 3.2 or something like that. And if that's the case, it's a much easier contract to get rid of. But then if the bidding starts going up, like, didn't Ullmark get $5 million? Like, now all of a sudden there's these goalies that don't have much of a track record that are getting tons of money. And a lot of them are going to be mistakes. Like, there's going to be a lot of mistakes, you know, this offseason too. I mean, if Kemper gets $6 million long term and Campbell gets $5 million long term, and the crazy thing is that who knows which ones are mistakes and which ones aren't.
Yes. And that's kind of where I ended up at. Like, as much as it seems like, oh, it's a risk, like, if you just trade for Reimer and make him half of your crease, is it really like that much? Is he really that much less or riskier than Campbell?
We should be clear too, Jonas. We don't know if San Jose's trying to trade Reimer. Like, he was their best goalie last year, and like, I wasn't able to nail down that was actually. And the other thing I should say is, when Reimer was a free agent, I think both times, I want to say, there was no indication that this Leafs front office was interested in him. So I don't know if that's analytics or what it is, but I remember digging around on that in free agency. They weren't talking to Reimer's camp. Like, I don't even know if they want him in any sense.
Okay, well, we do know, Kyle Dubas said this, that after they made the Mrazek trade, that teams just started approaching them with their extra goalies.
It was Minnesota.
About trades.
I guess it was probably Minnesota and Ottawa. I mean...
Yeah, I'm sure there were others. I mean, San Jose does have three goalies, like, so...
Yeah.
But
other than Reimer, would you want either of the other guys?
Not really. Like, Cam Talbot doesn't... do anything for me. But you mentioned Kemper. What about just paying Kemper? And now, like, obviously, you've got other teams interested. Like, he may want to go to Washington. Washington may be willing to pay. But what if you just said, we're just going to get him? We're just going to pay.
Well, Jonas, the rumor is he wants 6x6. You can do a 6. I mean, we're just talking about the risk and all that. And Kemper didn't exactly cover himself in glory in the playoffs. Like, If I could get Kemper for 2 years at $5 million, I'd do it tomorrow. But that's not what the contract's going to be.
No. You know,
you're going to have to commit term and a lot of dollars. And the thing that happened, like, Colorado was just like, we don't think this guy's worth that. And I think Colorado is one of the smartest teams in the league. Their cup win was well earned. They got a lot of smart people in that front office, including analytics people that contributed to them winning. If they don't see the value there, I think they're right.
Well, they're basically just saying what the option that I'm kind of thinking about is, we're just going to go with these guys, Georgiev and Fran Kuz. I can never remember how his name is actually pronounced. It seems like everybody...
That name is-
Anyway,
Franzos.
And if it doesn't work, we can just get someone else. But I guess what I was thinking, James, like, if you're that front office, this is something that they have not done to their credit. They've never just said, you know, fuck it, we're just going to make a move, and if it screws up the organization long term, we'll be gone. Like, we don't care. They really have not done that at all.
People could argue, like, first giving up a first round pick for Foligno or something like that hurts them long term, I guess.
That's no, I mean more like a long term, like I guess that's fair, but
I think they were fairly close on, like, trading everything in the kitchen sink for Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, you know, the trade they eventually made to get rid of Mrazek was better than that one.
But they were trying to win a cup. Like, that I mean, like, a trade where you're just signing a long term contract or trading for a long-term contract and saying, fuck it, like, if this doesn't work out, we'll be gone anyway, like, we don't have to worry about it. And so that's what I'm thinking with Kemper. Like, you could just say, you know what, we just need him to be good this year, next year, and if it doesn't work out 3 or 4 years from now, like, it's someone else's problem to deal with. I just don't see them doing that, I guess, is where I'm at.
The other thing we should say is that, you know, you were talking about how there's few chairs left in musical chairs. I mean, it goes the other way for the goalies too. Like, there's only... Who's going to pay Kemper if it's not Washington? Like, let's say everyone that I've talked to thinks Campbell's going to go to Edmonton and it's going to be like 5x5. And my understanding is the Leafs don't want to pay that. So then all of a sudden you're down to Kemper and he's got Washington and Toronto. If Washington decides they don't want to pay him 6x6 or whatever, what do they want to pay him? And where does the price come down to? And at what point, if you're the Leafs, do you want to get involved? And I think, too, if you're the goalie, I mean, you probably have a better chance to win in Toronto than Washington, just with
the age of the teams. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, Backstrom's hurt and things like that there.
Yeah. I'd lean flexible. I mean, because, like, so you mentioned Varlamov. If the Islanders season doesn't go well, there you go. Just trade for Varlamov.
Go for him. That's interesting.
And, like, there are other teams like that who might not be great and who might have goalies. I don't know.
They go into the year with, like, a bunch of cap space that they can use to, like, flexibility to make trades during the season, as opposed to going in with, like, 4 cents left under the cap.
Yeah, you can use some of the money to try to fix some stuff elsewhere. Like, one thing that we haven't probably talked enough about is, like, how are they going to fix this second line center thing? Like, where exactly is that person coming?
You put that in your goalie story, and I saw some of the comments are like, why did Jonas throw in, like, a second line center comment? So maybe you can just explain why you mentioned that as one of their needs.
Well, I mean, you and I have been talking about this for a long time, and it seems in the ether that, like, they're going to have to figure out this Tavares thing, like, whether he can be their second line center or whether they have to move him to the wing.
Not just him, too. It's like him playing with Nylander just didn't work for long stretches of last season. And if you keep both guys, are you playing them together? And, like, if you do that, what's going to change?
Yeah. And so there was Elliot Friedman mentioned it in one of his columns that the Leafs, I'm paraphrasing, but that maybe Tavares becomes what they're going to call a hybrid forward next year, which basically is just like he's just going to take faceoffs, but he's going to play the wing. Like, he's one of the best faceoff guys in the league.
You and I have been talking about this for years. A long time. And yes, the thing too, you hear whispers of it around the league. I've heard of about it. I mean, Stamkos is the perfect example, right?
Perfect example. And younger than Tavares.
And Stamkos, I would say, is probably a better skater.
Yes,
you know, for sure. You know, the fact that, and Stamkos embraced that, and then you win two cups. So that's all the Leafs need to do, right?
Yes. And honestly, I have no reason to think that Tavares wouldn't embrace it. But so the question is like, okay, well, how are they going to get that guy? Because like, if they don't have a ton of cap space, and like, they're probably not going to be able to afford these free agent centers. Okay, so well, how are you fixing that issue? Are you moving Marner over? Are you moving Nylander over? Are you just keeping Tavares there? Like, so that's one of the things. Like, if you spent a little less in goal to start, maybe you can address that need, because it's a need. Like, it's been going on now for a couple of years, where when his line is on the ice, despite easier matchups, easier deployment, they're getting, the ice is tilting the wrong way. So that's why I mentioned that.
Well, and how do you know, you lose Mikheyev, and like, how does the forward group get better, or at least stay the same as what you had last year?
Well, so let's actually take a break, and then let's get into that. And then a little later, we got to get into the pod bag. So let's take a break, and then we'll dive right into that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Perfect segue, James, from you before the break. You mentioned the forward group. So we're recording this on the morning of qualifying offer day. It should be like a little holiday, don't you think? QO day? Is it a holiday?
Why would that be a holiday?
I don't know.
The agency's not a holiday. The draft's not a holiday. But yes, the qualifying offer day is the holiday.
Well, so there are potentially going to be some guys out there who don't get qualified, which is how the Leafs got camp last year.
Do you have a list?
No, because it's not required to be in until 5 o'clock. So not all the teams have.
No, but I just meant like guys you think that might be on that. Like, so well, Chicago, yeah. Like, Kubalik and Dylan Strome aren't going to get qualifying offers, so that's kind of interesting.
Well, so I mentioned a few of the guys who I didn't think would get qualified in a UFA best fit story or a free agent best fit story. Kubalik was one of them, and I think it's just going to depend on the cost, but he can score. And so, like you mentioned Mikheyev, well, they're going to need to replace some of the offense that he left, although he didn't produce in the playoffs. But I kind of like the idea of him as a second, third line kind of guy who will score on the power play a bit. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me ask you this, Jonas. I know you've looked at the cap situation, as have I. Do you think that the Leafs have room to add another $3 million plus forward given their cap situation?
That's a good question. Like, so can you get him for less than that?
I think that's probably about the right number. Unless you're going to like try and wait it out and like get guys that don't sign, but I look at the free agent class and I look at how much money some teams have to spend, and you know, it's like, look, last year there weren't a whole bunch of bargains in that range. You know, normally the bargains are going to come with guys with bigger question marks around them, like Bunting and but Kasha.
He does have like some question marks. Like, he only had 32 points last year. He's basically had the one really big year as a rookie, and like, it's been just okay since.
Okay.
And I
but
wonder,
I still think
James,
he's going to get like 275 or something like that, right?
So that I think about that. I'd have to think about that if I'm them. And maybe what they can do, I think one thing that they did well last year is they offered the second year. Obviously, they did that with Richie. They did that with Camp. They did that with Bunting. So like, maybe if you offer 2 years, maybe you can get a guy like that. Another guy I like, and again, we're recording this before all the QO stuff has come out, like Miles Wood with Jersey, I think would make a lot of sense for them. Like, he's just like a really, one thing like you and I talked about in the playoffs and watching Colorado and watching Tampa, or maybe I talked about this with Chris Johnson, our buddy, is they just have like a lot of, Chris used the word gamers, And Miles Wood just kind of fits that for me. Like, you think of like Nick Paul in the playoffs, like how he performed for Tampa. You think of like Goudreau and Coleman and guys like that over the years. And I kind of feel like he would be in that mold for the Leafs. Like, they kind of need a little more, I don't know, like just bulldogs.
Marchand-ness.
Yeah, like jerks a little bit. And he's not a jerk, like, but he tries really hard and he can score around the net. I don't think Strome really makes sense for them. And he's probably going to get more than they would want. Like, he doesn't.
You know what I don't understand, Jonas, is like, why does Chicago not qualify these guys?
Know.
Like, why don't you just sign them and then trade them for like a draft pick or something? Like, isn't that like better than just walking away?
It feels like very poor asset management, honestly.
They're just like lighting the whole it's like,
because you could just
setting the house on fire when you could just sell the house and like go get a new one or whatever.
Right. You bring him back and then halfway through the year you trade him for something else. And basically you're just
pump up their value, put them on the first line, let Kubalik score 20 goals in the first 40 games and then auction them off and retain part of the salary. Like, and you'll get an asset.
Yes. It's very bizarre what they're doing over there.
Like, I understand. You know, and the other thing too is, I mean, with the way the lottery is, you're only going to have like whatever it is, 18% chance of getting, it's going to be a good draft, but there's no guarantee you're going to win the lottery.
Well, and you want as many like things as you can get, right? Like, you, as many assets and picks and prospects, and I don't know, it's bizarre what they're doing there.
And if you just walk away from talented players, it's, anyway, they got Peter Mrazek at least.
I'm trying to.
Are they going to play him like 63 games next year?
Yeah.
Watch him be good. Watch him play really well.
He'll probably bounce back and be like okay.
And the Leafs will have to reacquire him.
Yeah. So those were a couple of the guys that made sense in terms of like not being qualified. I have a whole list of guys. It's in my notebook, buried somewhere.
Smells like a column.
Well, we need to see what comes out. But so. You mentioned Kasha and Engvall. You had mentioned this in a column like a month ago, maybe longer, that there was potential for Kasha not getting qualified. Do you want to just kind of re-explain why and where you think things will lead?
Well, I think just with his injury history, the Leafs don't know how many games he's going to be able to play. And, you know, he came in last year off a season where he only played 3 games, and that's why he was available at the contract. He signed for $1.25 million. With the year he just had for the Leafs, even after missing the number of games that he did, he can command a bigger contract than that. And if you're Kasha, you want a team to give you maybe 2 years or something just with his injury history. I mean, if he can get a 2-year deal for $2 million a year or $1.8 million a year, that's $3.6 or $4 million that, you know, help set him up for the rest of his life, given how much money he's missed out on with all the injuries and everything. So I certainly understand it from his perspective, you know, and if the Leafs do give him a qualifying offer, he's got arbitration rights. You go to arbitration, you look at his history in the league. I don't know what, I think it was just too big of a wild card for the Leafs. Like, if you go to arbitration, like, do you want Kasha at 2 million? Do you want him at 2.4? You know, like, what number is too much? And I think that, the Leafs are probably better off having that flexibility. And if Kasha doesn't get that offer that he's seeking, like something with some term or with a higher dollar number, maybe they do circle back and there is a match there.
So I was going to ask you to put on your Brandon Pridham hat, and what would you offer?
I would give him like, you know, I think I'd be okay. I would give Kasha like a 2-year deal at like 1.5 or something.
That's
like
exactly
that.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Exactly.
Yeah, something like that would be fine. And if he ends up hurt, like, put him on LTIR and you're all right. But, you know, so I think that there's been a lot of talk between the Leafs and NCAA, which is the agency that represents Kasha. There's been a ton of conversations. They both know where they stand. Sometimes in these situations, you just go to free agency and see what else is out there. And maybe you're like, you know what? You know, Kasha wants to be in Toronto. You know, his David Kampf is his best friend. He loved playing here. He wants to come back.
They handled his concussion stuff really well, patiently.
Yeah. Yeah. So I still think there's a chance he does come back.
Well, so you mentioned the cap space. So they have, like, depending on how you shuffle things, like around like $13 million-ish. Mm-hmm. And they need two goalies. They need like a top nine forward, maybe like a second center. They need another defenseman. They need some fourth liners. So
they need to sign Sandin and Engvall.
They need to sign Sandin and Engvall. So that's some money. So like
we're probably going to be more than the least we're hoping.
So we'll get to Sandin in a second because I want to talk about that. How much you and I have talked a little bit about this just because I've been digging into like who they could get and wrote about it. How much would you invest on their fourth line? Like how much is too much? Like I looked at Colorado and Tampa basically playing like $3 million-ish for their fourth lines.
Yeah, the Leafs are making a lot of noise that they want Marley's guys playing there, which and I don't know who makes sense, but
maybe Joey Anderson.
Yeah. I think they're gonna go relatively cheap on the fourth line to answer your question. The one thing I would think about if there's someone, and I don't have a name on the tip of my tongue, if there's someone that makes sense is maybe someone who can play center on the fourth line, because that's been a bit of a problem.
My guy Darren Helm. That's who I like.
You need someone that can win some draws and play in the D zone, and like if someone gets hurt can move up to the third line if needed, and they need
that's with Darren Helm. There you go.
With Spezza gone and you know, you don't want Kerfoot playing on the fourth line, so they're gonna need someone that can do that. So, but I do think that spending only around $3 million on the fourth line is fine. It's relatively common around the league. You just got to get the right guys for that $3 million.
Yeah, I just and so in that 13-ish million, like I wasn't including Wayne Simmonds. I just don't know if he's an NHLer anymore. Same with Kyle Clifford. They just need to have a fourth line that can actually play. That was something that hurt them in that Tampa series. So before we get to the pod bag, let's just talk a little bit about Sandin. He'll get qualified today. What do you think happens here? Like we had talked about it last time a little bit and I wondered like, do you trade him? That doesn't seem like out of the realm of possibility now. It doesn't seem likely, but it doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility.
Well, just like some of what's floating out there is that it sounds like he's not happy about where things are at and about there not being a clear role for him on the blue line. And I don't know necessarily that it's like about playing on the right side as it is about there's a lot of defensemen and a lot of veteran defensemen, and he doesn't want to sit in the press box for half of next season. So I think some of the difficulty in the negotiation, and the talk is that he doesn't want to sign a contract like what Liljegren did, is more about opportunity for Sandin than it is about money.
Well, and I think this is also tied to the way things have gone in recent years. Like, this is not just one thing. So, like, you go back a couple years when they signed Mikko Lehtinen, and then Lehtinen plays ahead of Sandin. I mean, you can look last year. He comes back from the injury in the playoffs. There's no spot for him. Like, he played I think if he was healthy, he would, well, who knows, I guess. But, like, it's kind of an accumulation. And then they signed Mark Giordano right after the season. Now you have Riley, Muzzin, Giordano. It's like, well, where do I fit?
Yeah.
I just think it's a lot of that stuff. And then it's like...
But, like, the injuries aren't, like... They're no one's fault, but the injuries... I mean, Mikheyev went through it, right? Like, look at the contract Mikheyev was playing on. If he hadn't have been hurt, he would have made a lot more money and that's just the way that it works. So, I understand where both sides are coming from here. I do. But I still think at the end of the day, Sandin... The Leafs need to explain to Sandin where he's going to play for them.
Yes.
And as long as that's in the top six and he's going to be an everyday player, which he should be, I think he should come back even if it's on a 1-year deal.
Well, and so that's part of this. Like he's not going to be cheap for long. In like next summer, if he signs a 1-year deal, he'll have arbitration rights. But I thought one of the interesting things, like Kyle Dubas really tried to get that message out. Like we believe in this guy, him and Timothy Liljegren are big parts of our future. But one of the things he also did mention is like we need him to basically kick up his conditioning is kind of what he said. Like he said we need to arm him with the tools or whatever so that he's not getting injured, which to me reads as like we need him to be in even better shape than he's been in.
Yeah, it sounds like that's there's like a concern on the team side, and then that comes out, and then we start talking about that, and it could sour the relationship even further. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
Yep. Lots of interesting stuff. We didn't even talk about the draft. Do you have any thoughts on the draft before we get to take a break?
I was surprised.
I thought
we were going to talk about it like off the top.
Yeah, it's on the list.
It's hard to evaluate the draft, as you know, you and I focus a lot on the NHL.
Yeah.
I know a lot about Minton just because Kansas is one of the few junior teams that I actually do watch from time to time. He was awesome in the playoffs. You know, I watched a couple of their games in the playoffs because, you know, Kansas was one of the best teams in the CHL this year. They had a chance. They went relatively deep in the WHL playoffs. He's a gamer, you know, not the biggest guy in the world, but it kind of brings some of those intangibles you were talking about, like just, you know, a hard worker, a good checker, a smart player. His numbers during the regular season weren't anything to get super excited about, but people need to keep in mind he was on a really good team. So he was a little bit down the lineup, was playing on the, on the penalty kill and kind of some defensive minutes. And the other thing too, is he's very young. Yes. What's his birthday? July?
He just turned 18.
Just. Right. So, you know, he's playing a 17-year-old on one of the best teams in junior hockey. And the fact that he did what he did during the playoffs, really helping Kamloops to go on the run that they did, is promising. And he's going to be a player, you know, people should keep an eye on not only the WHL playoffs, but the Memorial Cup next year, because he's going to be a big part of what they try and do. And a lot of developing that still needs to happen there. But it's interesting, you know, that the Leafs are looking at hockey IQ as a big part of what they're looking for. And we didn't get the full breakdown of how it worked, but they were kind of like testing the players they were interested in, their hockey IQ, by like showing them some video and some situations and saying, what would you do here and what would you do there?
Yeah.
And my understanding is he scored very, very high on those tests.
Well, and he's a center. They could use more center depth. He's a long way away.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he's not going to be a guy that's going to be making an NHL impact in the next 3 years. So that's, I mean, when you're picking high second round, that's often the case.
All right, let's take a break and let's get to the pod bag. All right, James, pod bag time. A reminder to visit your local restaurants. We had some great local food and local food. We had great restaurants in Montreal.
Yeah, enjoyed I don't know ourselves. If that counts as local. They were local to the hotel we
local
were staying at.
Local to Montreal.
Man, what a city. Like, yeah. Montreal in the summer.
Elite.
I was like, I should move here at some point.
They should just do the draft there every year. I would be totally fine with that.
Yeah, did you hear that they're talking about potentially not doing the draft in person? Like, some teams liked the remote draft. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want to, like, kill the event.
Really? Why did teams like that?
Just because, like, it's... And Chris Johnston talked about this on his podcast with Julian McKenzie, which I highly recommend, which is a great show. That some teams felt like it was just easier to kind of like have their conversations and do their business when they're in like a more controlled environment in their war rooms in their various cities.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, which would be too bad because like the atmosphere on the draft floor is pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it. I would be sad about that.
The rumor for where the draft's going to be next year, I heard a couple when we were in Montreal, and the two ones that I heard the most were Nashville and Seattle, which would both be a lot of fun.
That would be awesome. I'm good with either one of those.
My guess is, and like, I don't want everyone to say, this is not a sure thing, this is just like a rumor, but my guess is it's going to be Nashville, which would be fun.
That'll be trouble for some people.
Yeah, including yourself.
Nah.
You were having more fun in Montreal than... I don't know if I've ever seen you go that hard before.
Yeah. All right, what do you got?
God bless everyone. We put out the call for questions on late notice, and there are many questions in the pile, so thank you. Daniel says, what is Rasmus Sandin worth in a trade?
That's a really good question. Now, let me ask you, pretend you're another team. How would you feel?
I would think that a lot of teams don't know what he is yet.
Yeah.
He hasn't played a lot. So you're kind of trading for potential. But, you know, he's a former first round pick. very, very good in a third line role. He's played on the power play, put up some points. He's played a little bit in the playoffs in the past. I mean, I think he's worth more than like a second round pick or something like that. Like, I think he should be worth like a pretty strong asset.
Yes. Just based on his age and how he's performed so far in the NHL.
Yeah. I mean,
and his skill set.
Got a lot of potential. I don't want to give him up because like, I'm worried that he's going to turn into a really good player.
So at this point, and obviously, like you said, like we still are learning about him. If you were going to guess what he becomes, like how good do you think he is? Do you think he's a first pair defenseman? Do you think he's a second pair?
I think he's like a 3-4 guy.
Yeah, I do too at this point.
But it's possible. I mean, it's hard with players that young that you haven't seen so much to know what they're going to be. But I've thought for a long time that he's going to be, you know, a real solid second pair D.
Like, do you think he's Sam Girard eventually?
No.
Not that good? Not as good as Skater? No.
He doesn't have the mobility.
That's.
All right. Connor W., you already addressed this a little bit, but I think it's probably worth maybe going into a little bit more. Would Dylan Strome be worth a look? He's probably going to get more money than...
The problem is like, okay, so where do you play him? He's like, I'm not playing him in the middle ahead of Tavares. Like, I don't think that makes a sense, like having a line with him and Tavares and Nylander or Marner. I just don't think that that's an upgrade at center in the way that you need it to be an upgrade. Do you?
And it's a style of play thing too, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't think he fits with who they have to play him with, to be honest, like skating and those kind of things.
I don't think you can pair him and like Tavares. Like, that's a little too slow. I think.
So I think he's going to get a decent contract. Like, again, with like Kubelik, I mean, Strome had like a point a game in the second half of last year, right? Like, you know, you're some team that misses out on the Kadris and the Giroux and Malkins and Gaudreaus, and you're going to be looking for offense. And there's not that many, you know, potential centers available. Someone's going to pay Strome, and it's not going to be the Leafs.
What a sliding doors moment though, James. Like, so he goes third. They could have taken Marner, obviously. They don't. Like, I wonder what the world looks like if Arizona had just taken Marner, and I don't know what the Leafs would have done. Like, it's possible they would have taken a defenseman, yeah.
For sure they would. I mean,
they probably would have taken either Provorov or Hanifin.
Werenski was the one that I heard that was real high on their list. Babcock, maybe you trade back.
I mean, Babcock told me that they talked about Provorov and Hanifin were the two they discussed.
I've heard that stealth one on their list was Werenski. And sure. Columbus got him eighth and was... I remember they were like giddy after that draft that they got him eighth.
Yeah, looks pretty good. Although, I mean, Rantanen goes two picks later. Who else? Kyle Connor goes 17. That is a loaded fucking draft. Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know why Rantanen and
Barzal goes 16. Joel Eriksson Ek goes 20. Brock Besser, 23.
Barzal should have never... Like, Boston should have taken him with one of their picks, right?
Boston gets zero. Well, Boston basically just ends up with DeBrusk. They had three picks in a row, 13, 14, 15.
I mean, and everyone knew it at the time. Everyone was like, what on earth?
You mentioned Sebastian Aho. He goes 35. Tough. Ooh, Rasmus Anderson, 53.
My Twitter is just blowing up today. I'm trying to like make sure we don't miss anything here.
Here's another one, James. Anthony Cirelli, 72.
Yeah, well, that's a hell of a pick. Oh, man. That's what you're hoping for with Fraser Minton is you're getting a guy that's like the defensive play is going to be so good that, you know, Cirelli's not the biggest guy in the world either.
Nope.
Not that I'm saying that Minton is going to be Cirelli. I'm just saying like they're looking for like the IQ piece of it to be the big part of it. Dylan wants to know, how ready do we think Nick Robertson is? How much patience should the Leafs afford him? Can he and Joey Anderson be part of a useful fourth line, maybe with like a Colin Blackwell or a Colin White as the fourth line center? I don't mind that. And I think that I would rather do that than like a Clifford Simmons kind of thing they were trying last year.
I agree with that. I would rather get some guys who I know for sure can play. Like they can't. I'd leave one spot open. Maybe it's 13th forward for one of those guys. And maybe Robertson
don't even have a 13th forward though, right? Like they haven't had the cap space to have one the last few years.
Then, like they can't mess around. Like they can't.
The good news with Robertson is he's on an entry level, so you can just bounce him back and forth, right? Like you don't have no one's going on waivers, and that puts you in a good spot with him where he can just be your extra guy if someone's hurt.
Yeah, he didn't have a great showing last year. Like that wasn't.
You watch him in the AHL though, and he's still super young, and it's like, well. Like, I think he's an NHL player. I just don't know.
I think that's yet to be determined.
I think he's an NHL young. Player.
Like, he'll be 21 in September. Like, he's.
I think if you're 20 and you can put up a point a game in the AHL, almost always you're an NHL player.
We got to see it. I mean, he's only played 16 games. Like, there's not enough of a sample size.
What I'm saying is what he's done in the AHL, I think you can
Yeah, but lots of guys who can produce in the AHL don't produce in the NHL. Like
not at 20, though.
Yeah, but like sometimes
it's an age thing.
Yeah, but sometimes it just doesn't translate. Like size and skating to me are legitimate questions about him.
Yeah,
but
telling you though, like you look at the list of players that have produced like that at 19, 20 years old in the AHL. It's very, very small the number that don't make at least some impact. And like I said, I don't know if Robertson is a second, a third, or a fourth liner yet.
Yeah, I would bet on him to play, but I don't know what he is at this point, like you're saying.
Brian wants to know if the Leafs do trade for Matt Murray. Is he the backup, or do you think the plan is for him to be the starter? I think it's going to be a tandem. I mean, I don't see... Oh, I don't know who the other guy is, right? So it's hard to say. They could go with two guys that are kind of question marks and just like see who plays well.
Yeah, that's again, we need to see what a trade would look like before we can kind of really break it down.
John wants us to do a goalie pool where we like pick different goalies with salary and term. And
well, let me ask you, James, like what Colorado gave to Georgiev. What do you think about that? So they gave him 3x3.4.
I don't see it. I mean, he hasn't been very good the last couple of years in New York. Like they were ready to walk from him and not qualify him. And then all of a sudden.
Yeah, but like not a great defensive team. If you look at some of the underlying stuff, like I think his 5-on-5 numbers were okay, if I recall correct. Like
it'll be super interesting if Colorado
not great,
but if he like Grubauer looks really good in Colorado, goes to Seattle and is brutal. Kemper looked good in Arizona, so that maybe that's the greatest example. But you win a cup with Kemper not playing that well. Like maybe Colorado just feels like like we feel okay with just taking a chance on some guys. But I was surprised that Georgiev got the term that he did on his deal.
Well, he's not old. Like he's only, I think he's 26. Yeah, he's 26. Yeah.
I just don't know what he is. I mean, they
might be just thinking we're so good. Like we just need him to be fine. And if he's fine, we'll be fine. And they also, what the other difference is? Like now that they've got their cup, they probably feel a little more emboldened. Like,
here's one question. James B says, what the hell is going on? I played on my beer league team last night, and that was kind of the question. I was getting questions from guys on my team, and they're like, what's going to happen? Like, they don't understand what the plan is here. So we'll see if Kyle Dubas' strategy pays off here or not. Dylan wants to know, what about Connor Brown coming back as part of the package if there's a trade with Ottawa? Or what are the odds that the Leafs look at getting Puljujarvi, who's on the way out in Edmonton?
Again, I just don't really see the fit.
Both those guys are, it's gonna the contract's gonna be $3 million range, right? So there's a world where the Leafs can potentially fit in another $3 million forward, but it's gonna mean they spend less in goal and Hall's going to have to go, but it's possible they add one more $3 million forward.
Well, ideally that guy plays forward. Like I think Brown would be helpful for them for sure. But again, like that center ice question on the second line doesn't get answered. Yeah. With that.
You mean not ideally he plays forward. Ideally he plays center, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you just added him to the top nine pool, like sure. Yeah. Like he's exactly the kind of guy like I was talking about. Like he is a gamer. Like people in Toronto know that. But then like what are you doing with that second center spot? I don't know. because he's a winger.
Connor asks a question that you and I were talking about in Montreal. He says, what realistically does the market look like in a trade for Justin Hall? Is he packaged in a deal for an asset, or is it just a dump? If it's the latter, if it's a dump, shouldn't we just keep him as the seventh defenseman? He's been pretty reliable.
That's what I believe. Like, that's right.
Yeah, you just don't see teams with a $7 million or sorry, a $2 million seventh defenseman.
Yeah, but so obviously we need to see what happens with Sandin. I think he's become underrated a little bit, honestly.
Yeah, well, he became the scapegoat last year, despite, I mean, he had good playoffs. Muzzin and Hall both struggled through the first, whatever it was, 30-odd games of the year. And then, you know, Hall in the second half, like all his underlying numbers, and once he got away from Muzzin as a partner, it started to go in the right direction for him. So, and the thing to keep in mind is that Sheldon Keefe often plays him on the second pair. So it's not as if he's getting heavily sheltered. I think that, you know, Hall's an NHL player. If he's playing on your third pair, he's going to do well there. I think the question for the Leafs, and we've talked about this before on the show, is they want to change the way that the blue line looks in terms of the physicality and some of those kind of things. They want to have those elements. And they don't, you know, if they have Liljegren, Sandin, and Hall, they might feel like there's just a little bit too much in the direction of finesse.
Yeah, but it's also about size, and like he is obviously of great size. And you look in the playoffs, James, like that pairing, Giordano and Hall, was excellent when they brought it together after game two. I don't know. We need to see what happens with Sandin. And we obviously need to see what happens with the rest of the roster, but I would just not be in a rush to dump him. I just think he's useful to have.
Well, it's interesting, Jonas, because they were looking at trading both he and Dermott like early last season. You know, I got wind in November that they were being offered around the league, and, you know, people liked Hall a little bit more than Dermott, but my understanding is they weren't getting much in the way of assets offered back. So, like, he's worth more than nothing.
Yeah. Right? Well, and you're going to need, even if you kept Sandin, you're going to need a seventh defenseman. Like you said, it's not ideal to pay a seventh defenseman $2 million, but maybe like you're not going to, maybe you don't play Muzzin every game. Maybe you don't play Giordano every game. Like, you're going to have injuries. I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder if the conversations with Giordano were, you're not going to play every night.
I honestly, to me, it would be more about Muzzin than Giordano. But yeah, Giordano is 38.
Muzzin's the kind of guy that doesn't like to sit, right? Like, but, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Matthew says, given how bad the goaltending was for a lot of last season, can we equal or better he's saying we as if, you know, part of the Leafs, which we are not. Can the Leafs equal or better their results with league average goaltending? Yeah, I mean, like the one of the reasons for optimism is if they can find a way to get to be slightly better in goal, it's going to cover up more of the mistakes. I mean, the fact they had 115 points with the save percentage they did last year is pretty impressive and often gets overlooked.
Yes.
So, yeah, I just don't know. Right now,
it doesn't look like, great.
Well, right now, we don't know what that's going to be, right? I don't know how they're going to get to that end.
Yeah. What a pickle. Let's see, where did they rank? So they ranked 6th from the bottom in 5-on-5 save percentage last year. And these are the teams who were worse: Detroit, Buffalo, Arizona, Seattle, New Jersey.
Mike wants to know, is there any dark horse goaltender candidate out there besides the names we've already heard? I mean, I spent part of the weekend like calling around and checking on some names, and I was getting a lot of no's. You know, one I wondered about was Nedeljkovic in Detroit with Husso going there, but it sounds like Detroit wants both guys. So it doesn't sound like he's going to be available. Holtby is one we have talked about in the past, but the injury situation with him is worse than what is out there in terms of what's been reported. Like, he's not going to be ready to go. So I don't know about Halak, who's getting up there in years, but has been a good goalie in the past. Any other, you know, one who I would throw out there is Eric Comrie, maybe, who has not played a lot in the NHL and has been bounced around in waivers. But when he has played in the NHL, his numbers have been solid. Maybe that's a backup candidate if you do end up with, a better number one option.
Yeah. I mean, you could trade for Jake Allen if you wanted, although he's just kind of a tandem guy.
Well, and Montreal doesn't really know what they're going to, like, they might need Jake Allen.
Yeah, I guess with Carey Price, you don't know. Yeah.
Any thoughts on Colin White, who Ottawa bought out? Do you think he could be like a reclamation project? I mean, if he's playing on your fourth line, might be potentially. I don't know if he fits the like the style of what they were looking for on that line, though.
Yeah, I'd have to take a closer look. I don't think so, but maybe.
Yeah, a lot of questions, Jonas, about UFA forwards. Like, people are all wondering who the next Michael Bunting is going to be. I don't see someone who's going to break out to the extent that Bunting did, but
he was such a unique candidate.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like some of the, so some of the guys that I had on my top 10, some are gone. Fleury's gone. Darren Helm, I mentioned. He's not a Bunting candidate. Cogliano's gone. Miles Wood, I mentioned. I think Miles Wood would make a lot of sense for them. Just based on how he plays, like he's different from what they have a little bit. And he can score a little bit. Billy Huso's gone. Evan Rodriguez? You think he's going to get too much money?
Yeah, probably. And also, he had the chance to play for the Leafs in the past and chose not to. I mean, they acquired him at one point and he said thanks, but no thanks, and went elsewhere.
Yeah, but their opportunity has kind of opened up a little bit. I had Zach Aston-Reese, who I really like, as kind of like an energy type of guy for their third, fourth lines. Really good defensively. Really good defensively.
Jonathan wants to know, is Harry Sateri an option? No. I think he's serious.
Kubalik, we talked about. Mammon went back to the KHL, and Justin Braun as a seventh defenseman.
Well, I mean, they still like Lyubushkin, so... That's the other thing. If you're Sandin, if they're thinking about signing Lyubushkin, it's like, wait a minute, where is that guy going to play?
Yes.
Graham's asking what happened with Steve Briere. So we haven't talked about this yet. They named Curtis Sanford the goalie coach, which is an interesting name, a guy who played in the league. Owen Sound native Curtis Sanford played a little bit for St. Louis and I believe Vancouver and was in the Canucks organization as kind of a development goalie coach. We haven't really written anything about this yet, but Sanford apparently is known for his work with Demko and Spencer Martin out in Vancouver and working to develop them. Supposed to be pretty good with young goalies. So I don't know if that'll play into their decision on who they bring in. But and he's also got a reputation as being a really good guy. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, Sheldon Keefe talked about it a little bit over the weekend. Just that they were looking for a new voice. They took a lot of time, he said, to kind of decide what they were going to do. They interviewed, he said, 10 candidates, and they liked Curtis Sanford's communication skills, his ability to offer like clear, concise direction. And they liked that he had played in the league and like that he had also played in a Canadian market. So that's why they ended up going that direction. And it's going to be interesting to see what role he plays in who they get and what role, like one of the things with Matt Murray that you have to remember is John Elkin, who works for the Leafs as, I forget his title, was like Matt Murray's like goalie coach from when he was like a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's anyone who, and I think there's like a risk to this, like if there's anyone who believes that he can get Murray back on track, it would probably be John Elkin. But you got to be careful. Like that can be, familiarity doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to break through.
Well, and they know that Matt Murray from, I mean, Matt Murray has had good seasons in the NHL, but you know, just, now he's got miles on his body and the injuries and the age, and he's not old, but he's not young. And you got to be careful that the Matt Murray you remember from years ago is not, it's not going to be the same guy that shows up.
Yes.
I think that's it, Jonas. I mean, Zach wants to know if the Leafs can trade for Hellebuck, but I don't know how much you want to get into that one.
Yeah, I don't know why the Winnipeg Jets would be interested in doing that unless they're blowing it up.
Which they are not.
Yeah, you know, but so it's interesting, James, like just to wrap it up, like how the musical chairs kind of affects things. Like St. Louis was interested in bringing back Huso. If they bring back Huso, suddenly Jordan Binnington becomes an option, but that doesn't happen. So he's off the board. Like there's just all these like little.
Yeah. The ramifications. And the knock on effect. And yeah, it would be so fascinating to see, like, I'm sure this is all plotted out somewhere on like a big board at the Ford Center in one of the offices of the Leafs front office. It'd be interesting to see like, if this happens, then this will happen. And if this happens, then this will happen.
Yeah.
And they probably have a list of 20 goalies and like, here's who we want, you know, top option. you know, Kyle Dubas was even explaining some of like the game theory or whatever with it. Like, you know, if we trade for a guy, we got to give something up to get that goalie probably. But if we sign a guy, we don't have to give anything up. And that changes the equation on which route they want to go. And
yeah.
Anyway, but, you know, we're doing another podcast this week because everything going on. And, you know, I think probably by Thursday, we're going to know who their two goalies are going to be. And it's going to be a really big part of their season.
All right. Well, if you haven't signed up for The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/leafreport. We appreciate you listening. And like James said, we'll be back later in the week. Talk to then, James. Goodbye.
Cheers.